Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
And welcome to episode 10 of the Center of Everywhere podcast. I'm Marnie Werner, Research Director for the Center for Rural Policy and Development. And on today's episode, we stay in-house to discuss our most recent research brief. Julie will be talking with our research intern, Whitney Oakes, and me about volunteer drivers, a little-known but essential program in rural Minnesota that helps the elderly and handicapped stay in their homes. We'll talk about who these volunteer drivers are, why their numbers have been dwindling over the last couple decades, and how we can fix it.
Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast. My name is Julie Tesh, and I am the president and CEO of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. Today, we're going to discuss a topic that doesn't get a lot of attention, and that is volunteer drivers. We're going to be interviewing Marnie Werner, who is the VP of Research for the Center, and also Whitney Oakes, who is a student at the Humphrey School of Public Affairs in Minneapolis and also a CRPD intern. So first, I would like to welcome both of you to the podcast. And Whitney, why don't you just briefly give a background about yourself and what you're working on?
Thank you so much, Julie. Yeah, so I'm a second year MPP at the Humphrey School, studying politics and governance in particular. And I was really excited to get the opportunity to work for the Center for Rural Policy because I am from a rural community myself. I'm from the St. Croix River Valley in northwestern Wisconsin. And throughout my education, reflecting on the issues that affect my community and where I come from really drew me to the center and working here. And this summer, I've had the opportunity to do a full research project on volunteer drivers and particularly investigate why volunteer drivers numbers are falling and what that means for the people that depend on them.
That's fantastic. And we're very excited to have you on the podcast. And Marnie, you are a regular on our podcast. Why don't you just reintroduce yourself for our listeners and talk about what interested you in this topic originally?
Sure. Well, like you said, I'm Marnie Werner, and I'm the Vice President of Research for the Center. And I've been with the Center for quite a while, almost 20 years now. And this was a topic that actually was brought up to me by a woman in Aiken County back in about 2002, 2003, so pretty early on. This issue of the actually, it was the issue of reimbursement rates, which we'll talk about later. She told me about the declining numbers of drivers and the issue with reimbursement rates. And so that's always been in the back of my mind, you know, through the years, and it's come up occasionally. And now we had an opportunity with Whitney here looking for projects to do, and that topic came up and we handed it over to her and she took it and ran with it.
What I was just going to add is that my mom is a nurse in rural Wisconsin, and so volunteer drivers are really popular in our area because of the aging population, but it was never something that I had really thought about until Marnie brought it to my attention, because it just seemed like, oh, something the community does to, you know, take care of itself, like kind of self-sustaining. And the reality was much different, and that was really surprising to me.
That is a great lead-in, Whitney, actually talking about who are volunteer drivers, because like you, I had not given much thought to volunteer drivers. But now my parents are getting older, they're retirement age, and they might be good candidates to be drivers. And so that's something that I had never considered, and you just kind of take for granted. So why don't you tell our listeners who are volunteer drivers and who are the riders?
Volunteer drivers are part of the larger public transit programs in, well, actually all over the state, but Greater Minnesota is covered with a number of public transit programs that include not just like the little buses that drive around and do the dial ride thing, but also things like non-emergency medical transportation and even taxis to a certain extent. And this program is used mostly by the elderly, but also by handicapped people, people who can't drive themselves, but they need to get to the grocery store or to medical appointments and things like that. And so they're able to call on volunteer drivers to come and pick them up and take them to where they need to get to and take them back home again. The thing that's interesting, though, is that considering that the vast majority of the riders are seniors, elderly, a lot of the drivers are too. They're maybe not in that elderly category yet, but they're like younger seniors. They're between age 60 and 65, the vast majority of them. And there are a few older than that, and there are some who are a little younger than that. But so it really is the younger seniors driving the older seniors around.
Interesting. So what is happening with volunteer drivers in Greater Minnesota? You know, we know that we don't really have a mass transit system, so I guess this takes the place of that in a way. What exactly is happening around the state?
Well, the major issue is that the number of volunteer drivers are falling and falling more rapidly as time has gone on. But like Marnie mentioned earlier, this is an issue that has existed for a long time. And so this is kind of what we're seeing now is a culmination of many years of volunteer drivers dwindling to the point now where transit providers have to cancel rides or are unable to schedule rides for people that need them for healthcare access, for errands, and et cetera. One issue that is contributing to this is that there's fewer rural hospitals and further distances traveled for care are impacting this as well. Across Minnesota, we've seen hospital closures and consolidations, largely due to the fact that these are small populations, they're Medicare and Medicaid dependent residents. And with fewer hospitals, people need to go further to access the care they need. They can't even just, you know, go into town anymore to the local clinic or hospital. And so this is causing increased need for volunteer drivers because distances are longer, but there hasn't been anything done to really assess why volunteer numbers are falling.
So then what are the main issues at play in the volunteer driver deficit?
Well, the biggest one, which Marnie also touched on earlier, is reimbursement income's effect on Social Security benefits. So the charitable mileage reimbursement rate has been set at 14 cents per mile since 1986. And for reference, right now, the business mileage rate is 58 cents per mile. And so there's a really big difference here in what people are allowed to write off, what amount of reimbursement people are allowed to write off in their taxes. Thus, reimbursement actually counts as income, 1099 income, for a lot of these volunteer drivers, even though they're often only getting 58 cents per mile, the business rate. Nevertheless, they often owe taxes at the end of the year on this income, and this can cause issues with Social Security benefits in the long term.
So I need to go back and just reiterate for our listeners. You said that the charitable mileage reimbursement rate was last changed in 1986?
Correct. It has not changed since.
Wow. That is amazing. So what you're saying then is that we're seeing maybe drivers not taking as many clients or not doing as much driving because it'll affect their taxes in the end, correct?
Absolutely. And like Marnie said earlier, the majority of volunteer drivers are retired individuals using their social security benefits. And so when you live on a fixed income, you know, it is really important to keep track of what additional income may be on top of that, because then it can affect what you get monthly from your social security benefits. So even a relatively small amount can have major impacts for an average person.
Right, because it actually does even affect the amount of their benefits besides the taxes and how much is taxable. If you are between the ages of 62 and your official full retirement age, which varies between 65 and 67 right now, depending on when you were born. If you're in that in-between stage, the amount of income you earn alongside your Social Security benefits, if you earn over a certain amount, that will actually work against you, and your benefits will be reduced in the next year. So you could actually get less in Social Security benefits by making more at a job. And that's a lot of where the big sticking point is for this issue.
And I think it's important too to talk about the fact that these are supposed to be volunteers, you know, like that we shouldn't necessarily have to be talking about income issues related to Social Security benefits when they're volunteering their time and their privately owned vehicles to provide transit access for people that need it. You know, these aren't even typical employees.
It's not just a matter of picking someone up, you know, picking up your neighbor down the street and driving them to the clinic on the other side of town. A lot of these rides are like from Greater Minnesota to the Twin Cities for medical care, or from the small town across counties to the larger population center. And some of these rides can involve, you know, 100 or 200 miles in a day. And so we're talking about serious mileage here too.
So if the drivers are using their own private vehicle, that must mean that they have to use their own insurance on their vehicle, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's correct. So it's a privately owned vehicle. You have your own private insurance. There is an issue surrounding insurance, however, because as we've seen a rise in rideshare companies like Uber and Lyft, our laws around insurance requirements have changed. And this change has led to greater ambiguity about whether volunteers are employees or not, particularly because, as we mentioned before, you know, that many are making 1099 income. So with this new law surrounding insurance requirements for ride shares, some insurance companies are raising the rates for individual car insurance for volunteers. Now, this isn't across the board, but because the language isn't clear, this is leading some volunteers to pay more on insurance because, again, they're doing this charitable service.
So let's talk about, you know, with the insurance, that just is another, I guess, reason almost not to do it in a way. But also Talking about Marnie, what about centralization of transit services? You know, we're seeing in rural healthcare that we're going from, you know, more local clinics and hospitals to the larger regional based ones. What's happening with the centralization of those services for transit?
Right. Well, when we did a report on public transit systems in Greater Minnesota back in about 2015 or 2016 or so, and at that time, the MnDOT, Minnesota Department of Transportation, was just starting to encourage rural public transit systems to start regionalizing, start merging, basically, because there was actually an issue with who reimbursed who for volunteer driving. The funds for the volunteer drivers and for the other medical transit services are actually paid for by either Medicare or the health insurance companies. And a certain amount of that money is funneled through the counties. And because of that, there was actually issues about drivers crossing county lines and which county was responsible for paying the volunteer driver if they started in one county and ended the trip in another county. And so the state started encouraging these transit systems to regionalize so there wouldn't be as much of as confusion about this. And so when in the middle of the report, Whitney mentioned to me that they've gone from 78 county public transit systems in Greater Minnesota to 40. Mm-hmm. I was stunned. because it was in the, you know, in the course of about 3 years. And I was like, what happened? Well, it turned out that they had taken MnDOT at their word and they all regionalized. And so that solved crossing the county lines issue. But part of the problem now is that having taken the presence of the public transit system out of the local community or out of the county seat or whatever, it makes it less visible. And so some county officials have even been concerned that this lack of visibility is pushing the shortage of drivers, because people just don't think of it, you know, and they don't see it anymore. And so they don't think of it, and they don't have someone in their community actively, you know, recruiting people.
Yeah. Just to go off of what Marnie was saying, you know, in Roseau County, which is on the Canadian border, they now schedule volunteer drivers. The VA service now schedules volunteer drivers through Paul Bunyan Transit in Bemidji. You know, that's like 2 hours away from where the client actually lives because of the centralization of services. And that connects to the next point as well, because with this regionalization, you know, we have seen a higher rate of no-load miles. So no-load miles are distances traveled with a volunteer driver, but no client in the vehicle. So that would include the volunteer going to the client's house, and then when they drop them off at the end of their visit, going back. And so if you're a volunteer driver from an hour away from the person you're picking up, these no-load miles, you might not even be reimbursed for.
And Medicare doesn't reimburse for those no-load miles. And I believe a lot of the health insurance companies don't either. Is that correct, Whitney?
Yeah, that's correct. These no-load miles are not reimbursed by the healthcare organizations. And often the miles that are reimbursed at the charitable mileage rate of 14 cents. So the transit provider often has to provide extra money if they want to cover no load miles, or if they even want to cover, you know, up to 58 cents per mile.
So it sounds like volunteer drivers are obviously very important. And I know we have a lot of pressing issues in greater Minnesota. Why should we invest in volunteer drivers across greater Minnesota?
Well, you know, the truth is greater Minnesota is aging, and it's aging rapidly. And there is a growing need for transit infrastructure and an existing deficit in for transit infrastructure in greater MN. So, you know, as we're thinking about a growing elderly and a growing retired population, that they might age out of driving, they might not, you know, their eyesight might go bad. Like, there's lots of reasons that people aren't able to drive themselves places as they age. Where are the new volunteers going to come from, right? If the majority of our rural areas are old and trending older, we need to really mobilize the people that are within those areas to cover this deficit, because our transit infrastructure currently can't make up for it. In addition, volunteer drivers are by far the most cost-effective means of providing this transit, particularly for healthcare appointments, even when compared to other NEMT options, which are, you know, also state-based transit options.
So when you talk about that, it's most cost-effective, what do you mean by that? It's, you know, compared to, I know you said compared to the non-emergency medical, but just thinking of, you know, out here in greater Minnesota, where I live, like, What would be the other options that are more expensive?
Right. So the Minnesota Council on Transportation Access did a really interesting study that analyzed the cost effectiveness of volunteer drivers in 2017. And in there, they found that the cost savings for using a volunteer driver varied a lot depending on the alternate options that were in the area. But overwhelmingly, volunteer drivers ended up being cheaper. So that looked at, you know, coordinated transit that already exists. It looked at taxi services, dial-a-ride, as well as non-emergency medical transit. So the amount saved really depended on which other transit option you were comparing it to, but it ranged from, you know, $10-$14 a ride to $50-$100 a ride.
Wow, that's a huge difference. So really, when we boil this down with volunteer drivers, what we're looking at is it's a healthcare access issue. Because if we don't have enough drivers, our rural residents aren't going to be able to get the medical services that they need.
Yeah, it's absolutely a question of access. We want to make sure that as our communities age, that they still have access to the care that they need and also access to basic things like grocery store visits and other errands as well.
So, you know, we are a research organization, and we do try to provide some solutions or suggestions for state government, local government, federal government. Looking forward, I know it's a multi-pronged approach probably, but what are some things that we can do to solve this issue?
So, I mean, I think the biggest thing that would solve this issue would be to raise the charitable mileage reimbursement rate. The charitable mileage reimbursement rate is a major reason that people choose not to volunteer and choose not to contribute their time, mostly because they're afraid of the potential Social Security reductions that they might experience. So if we raise the charitable mileage rate, the federal government would need to do that because it's set in federal statute. So the state of Minnesota can't do anything about it. However, it would be a very quick and easy method to help with recruiting efforts. And there has been some legislation proposed in the past, in the last couple of years, including last year's session as well, to mitigate this issue, but it hasn't gotten a lot of attention from legislatures and is left out often.
So that's at the federal level, obviously dealing with taxes. What about at the state level?
So the state has the option to reimburse for no-load miles. As we talked about before, this is a cost burden to the transit organizations that provide volunteer transit, and it would also provide additional incentive for volunteers because if they know they're at least going to get reimbursed for all the miles they're driving, it may make that more likely. What this would help with is supporting local transit organizations. What it wouldn't help with is the Social Security reduction, again, that we were talking about with the charitable mileage rate, because as long as that doesn't change, even additional no-load miles will be counted as 1099 income. So I think this would help in the short term to keep these transit organizations afloat and promote additional recruitment efforts, but I don't think it would be a long-term fix.
Yeah, because like Whitney said, the state doesn't have a whole lot of latitude when it comes to raising the the reimbursement rate for charitable driving and mileage, because that's a federal matter. And so the same with no-load miles, a lot of reimbursement comes from Medicare, which is a federal program. The state doesn't have a lot of say over that, over whether Medicare does or not, but the state does collect those federal dollars and does have some latitude over what to do with some of those dollars. Where the state does have latitude is over insurance companies. And so with the health insurance companies, whether they could be asked to pony up for no-load miles, or even the state could really do a lot to clarify the auto insurance statutes that were causing that ambiguity for volunteer drivers too. That's something slightly different, but if that could be clarified, that could save volunteer drivers quite a bit of money. The problem with that, like Whitney said earlier, is that it created this uncertainty in the statutes as to whether this applied to volunteer drivers or just to rideshare companies. And right now, auto insurance companies are allowed to interpret that the way they want. And so some drivers are paying more now in premiums for what was basically the same auto insurance. And so if the legislature could go in and clarify that and make that clear as to whether that applies to volunteer drivers or not, or that it doesn't apply to volunteer drivers, that would take a lot of that uncertainty out of the issue too.
Yeah, I was just going to say absolutely on the insurance requirements. And again, when we're thinking about the driver population and a population being predominantly reliant on fixed incomes, you know, like nothing is worse than getting a bill or an email that says your rates are going up, you know, when you have a very planned budget and a very planned allotment of where your money and your funds are going to go. Even a small increase in auto insurance could definitely impact the lives of some of these drivers and some of these people who may want to participate but are nervous about the consequences.
So from the sounds of it, one thing that, I mean, it's not a silver bullet by any means, but I'm just trying to get people to understand it more. Is there a better word than volunteer drivers? You know, because that's something that it, are they or not? You know what? Yeah. Just thinking of that out loud, it's like, we probably need to work on a better word for that.
Right. It almost sounds disingenuous to say volunteer drivers when they're like considered, they're not really considered employees either. I mean, that's some of the confusion here.
Yeah, that's the problem. If they were employees, they could possibly then be reimbursed at the business rate. But, you know, it's probably better all around that they be considered 1099ers. And so it's, you know, how do you solve that conundrum? So volunteers are not really volunteers. Yeah.
Right. You know, it's like paid volunteers, kind of. So just something in the back of my head I've been thinking about. So if there are people out there in Greater Minnesota or even in the Twin Cities, and they are interested in being a volunteer driver/driver for people, how would they go about finding out about those opportunities?
Yeah, so I would recommend finding out what transit providers are in your area, and often many of them will have like links on their websites, especially to, you know, services for older folks and volunteer driver services. And usually there's pretty easy contact information there for someone to sign up. I think one thing that we could do to improve the visibility of volunteer drivers is if MnDOT were to support a county-based outreach to just be out on the ground in these communities, because, you know, the way it's set up right now, you have to kind of be a self-motivated volunteer driver to even find the opportunities a lot of the time to participate. But if we had some more intentional outreach methods across the state, I think that would really help improve visibility and help lots of different people understand how they can participate.
That's wonderful. We have the baby boomer generation that continues to keep on retiring, and I know a lot of them are looking for things to do to stay busy. So that would be something wonderful if they could look into that. So good ideas. And for our listeners, make sure that you, if you're interested, look in your county or look in your region for those transit opportunities as well.
Well, there are social benefits to volunteer drivers as well that go beyond, you know, just the actual transit access, like in and of itself. I think there's something to be said about volunteering and participating within your own community or within your own region and doing something for another person and for other people and for your community. And I think that is really powerful as well, because volunteer drivers aren't faceless, you know, they're members of the community just like the riders and the clients are. And there's really powerful opportunities there for greater community cohesion just through this program.
Marnie, you had something?
You know, well, Whitney said it better. I was just going to say, now that we've told everybody what's wrong with volunteer driving and basically laying it out that no, in such a way that nobody's going to want to do it, you know, it is, it has to be a rewarding program, because there are that, there's that core of people who stick with it and find it rewarding. And so it is a huge service to rural communities. When if you take a look at our report and you look at the amount of tax dollars and health insurance premium dollars it's saving some of these regions, we're talking, you know, $500,000 to $1.5 million a year in some of these places. If we didn't have volunteer drivers, people would have to be transported in by ambulance or by taxi, and it does, you know, and those things are far more expensive. And so this really is a very important program. It's one of those programs that really makes rural life possible, especially mm-hmm. for older people. It makes it so they can stay in their homes, they can stay in their communities, they don't have to go off to the nursing home necessarily. Mm-hmm. And it makes life better for a large number of people. And so it really is an important program that should get looked at and should really be reassessed and have solutions found for it to keep it going, because it really is in our best interest in rural Minnesota that we keep this going.
Great points you brought up, Marnie, just thinking about, you know, aging in place at home and being able to have that access to healthcare and having someone be able to take you, that's huge. So these volunteer drivers really are glue mm-hmm. in these communities. And Whitney, like you said, just it being so rewarding for people. So I encourage our listeners that if you are interested, please go and look this up. Like the report says, there is a shortage of drivers. And I would be remiss if I did not ask, where can people find the report?
Sure. It's on our website at ruralmn.org. It's right on the homepage. And you will be able to find it there.
Fantastic. And as a reminder for everyone, the research that the center does is free for everyone to use. So please go and utilize the data and the information when you're applying for grants, if you're working on a newspaper article or anything, that our information is free for you to use.
And I was just going to say, as a policy student, it's also a really, really great resource for students and for people interested in the issues that are affecting rural areas. And our website has been an amazing resource for me as I've completed my education at the Humphrey Schools. So if you have even any interest in rural issues at all, I really recommend checking out our work.
I love it. Good plug. Good job. Well, I would like to thank Marnie and Whitney for being on the podcast today and talking about volunteer drivers. Again, if you would like to look at our report on volunteer drivers and some suggestions that we have moving forward, you can go to our website at ruralmn.org. Thank you very much for joining us on the Center of Everywhere podcast. We hope you'll tune in next time.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.